So if someone asked you, what's the essential core of the Christian life, what would you say? Or if you asked your neighbors, your friends, somebody on the street, what's the central issue point about Christianity, what do you think they would say? I think a lot of people would say it's about goodness, or it's about doing the right thing, or being a moral person. But C.S. Lewis vehemently disagrees with that. The first quote on the top of the bulletin: I think all Christians would agree with me if I said that though Christianity seems at first to be all about morality, all about duties and rules and guilt and virtue, yet it leads you on out of all that into something beyond. One has a glimpse of a country where they do not talk about those things, except perhaps as a joke. Everyone there is filled full with what we should call goodness, as a mirror is filled with light. But they do not call it goodness. They do not call it anything. They're not thinking about it. They're too busy looking at the source from which it comes. Now, you could probably poke some hole, raise some concerns about it. It's some part of that quote. But I think it's an essential idea that Christianity is not about goodness. And so we're coming to this passage that's kind of an odd place in the letter of Galatians, but it's going to address what's that central core of what the Christian faith is about. Melissa Kong is going to come and read our text for us. Thank you. So I want to look this morning at what is the essential core of Christianity? What are some objections or a problem with this? What's the solution? And who did this, or who is an example of this? So in this, not all cultures don't argue the same way. And so Paul is arguing in this letter, and we come to this point where, according to how the Greco-Roman culture argued, he's kind of redefining all the main points that he's going to talk about later. And so this is kind of like the table of contents for what is going to come later. So it's a highly compressed, kind of odd, a little bit hard to figure out passage. But one of the things it does is it tells us what is that core, essential core of the Christian faith. And what it says is in verse 16, three times, it says, the core of the Christian faith is being justified. Yet we know that a person is not justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ. So we also have believed in Jesus Christ in order to be justified by faith in Christ and not by works of the law, because by works of the law, no one will be justified. But justified, it sounds like such a religious concept, right? Is this a case where Christianity is given an answer to a question that nobody's asking? I don't think at all. I think it's very relevant. I don't think this is religious language. I think this is what we live in, day out. Look at the second quote on the top of the bulletin from Harold Abrams. Harold Abrams, chariots of fire, you probably all know, but he's a sprinter, a 100-yard dash sprinter from the Olympics, a British runner. And he says, and now, this is right before his race, and now in 1 hour's time, I will be out there. I will raise my eyes and look down that corridor, 4 feet wide, with 10 lonely seconds to justify my existence. But will I? Justify his existence is, he's showing that all of us are worried about justifying our own existence. All of us are worried to figure out, do I matter? Do I can I excel at the tests of life? Can I offer something in some category that says, yes, I matter, I'm not a bum. Yes, I've excelled to a certain level. And so that's why I asked you, what are the areas in which you excel at? If you had to set up a competition, what area would you choose to have that go on? And so everyone is really, we use different words for justification, right? When today we say, do I matter? Am I significant? Is my identity established? How do I feel about who I am? And so the question is, two questions we could ask about justification is, where is this justification occurring? The word justification is like, it's a legal term. And so we could say for Harold Abrams, in one sense, there's a court of self where he's trying to justify himself. He's set up this thing to say, if I get the gold medal, then I'm somebody. Then my life is worth living, then I am justified. So it could be that your own, you have a court of self where you set up the criteria to be justified. It could be that you have a court of the world, that you're adopting other people's standards and that says, okay, if you get a certain medal at the Olympics, then everybody agrees you're not a bum. You actually have accomplished something in your life. You might mess the rest of it all up, but you're not a nobody. So look at the Johnny Weir quote, the third quote, for another example of how this sense, this need to justify ourselves is common in all of human experience. But my new routine has more to do with the path my career has taken. Before I got sick, I was the highest ranked American male man in ice skating. 1 minute it's the highest of highs, and then you're written off after one bad performance. I'm 25, and this could be the last realistic chance to be someone who matters. It's the same topic, just different language. Am I someone that matters? And I'm investing all of this question down to Johnny Weir is, can I deliver at the Olympics? And Johnny's quote helps us realize what's the way in which we usually try to justify ourselves, to say we matter. It's by how we perform. It's by, can I meet my standards or can I meet somebody else's standards? That's how we judge if we've made it, right? It could be 10 year for the professor. Once you get that, you're somebody, right? Olympics, it's getting the medal. It could be, for some people, it's in terms of money. It's like, when I get to this level, then I've made it. Then I'm actually, I matter. For all of us, there's some different category in which we pick to say, do I matter? If I get to this level, I'll matter. But Johnny's quote shows us how precarious that performance is. Right? He was the top-ranked male ice skater at one point, and then one bad performance, and he's written off. He says in this article, the whole story was plastered on the front of the New York Times. Like, I was shamed because I messed up one thing, and so all of this cred that I was producing just was wiped out completely. And so now he's trying to get back his thing. So that's what the Bible's talking about when it comes to justification, is do you matter in the court of self, in the court of others? But the Bible wants to add one more court, that there's a court, that God actually has a court. And it's, so God is going to judge, and do we matter to God? Have we excelled enough that God would receive us? Just like the question of whether we receive ourselves, whether others receive us. The question is, do we receive ourselves? And so the Bible's answer, though, is by works and performance, no one ever gets justified. That's the Bible's unique contribution to this essential human endeavor to justify ourselves, is three times he's saying, no one is justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ. And if you look at the way the three times happened, the first time he talks about it, it's kind of general. So we know that a person, that any human being is not justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ. And then the second time, so also we have believed, it's personal. Paul, and he's agreeing with, Peter would agree with him, we believe that you can't be justified by faith, by justified by works, but only by faith. And then the third time, it's the universal one. Because by works of the law, no one will be justified. So that's the Bible's particular take on this. And verse 15 looks like Paul is really dissing the Gentiles. He says, we ourselves are Jews by birth and not Gentile sinners. What he's really saying is, even if we take all of our good Jewish stuff, all of our connection to the Old Testament, we received the law, we've been trying to keep the law, we received circumcision, we had our bat mitzvah, we've got all this like Jewish performance stuff. What he's saying is, even for us, we've got the best advantage of all to make it in God's courtroom. But even we believe that our works we'll never get justified in that courtroom by works, but only by faith. So the and so we have, so it's put that, what is that faith? Let's look at that faith. So but through faith in Jesus Christ, so Jesus is the object of that faith. It's not just any faith. It's not like I'm a faith-filled person. I believe in everything and everybody. No, it's a specific focus of faith. It's faith in Jesus Christ. So we have also believed in Jesus Christ in order to be justified by faith in Christ. When it says there in by faith in Christ, one other way you could read that is we have faith in Jesus' faithfulness. My object of my faith is Jesus, who was completely faithful in living out the law. Jesus is the only one who justifies himself by works, in other words, because he did live a faithful life completely by God. And that's what enables us to be justified, because his faithfulness is credited to us. So the essential core of Christianity is in the courtroom of God, no one gets justified by what they do, by what they've accomplished, by their status, by their bank account, by their credentials, by their medals. But only faith in Jesus Christ is that thing that justifies us in the courtroom of God. But that's pretty heavy, right? So some people are going to object to that. So let's look at just a few objections and a problem. I think if someone's not a Christian, you're like, well, but wait, can you prove that there's a courtroom of God? Well, I can't A plus B plus C. I can't prove that there's a courtroom of God. But I think we can agree. I think we can look at human experience enough to say, you know, our works, our accomplishments, our performance, we don't justify ourselves out of that. We don't justify by other standards. We can't justify ourselves by that. And so certainly in God's presence, if indeed there's a time where we're brought into this courtroom where God is judge and says, how do you plead? Are you innocent? Are you guilty? Are you right or are you not right? That works can't fulfill that, right? That works, it's impossible for works to be the criteria by which that takes place. I think we could have a discussion, we could tease out all those things and we could agree as humans that that's the case. So the question is, what are you using to justify yourself? What are you using to prove to yourself and to prove to others and to God, if there is that courtroom, that you are in the right? And whatever you're using for yourself, will that make it all the way? Is that working for you? Is that giving you that justification, that status of being someone who matters? And then verse 17, though, has a objection that many Christians have had to this view that we're justified only by faith, not by works. It says, but if in our endeavor to be justified in Christ, we too are found to be sinners, is Christ then a servant of sin? What he's really saying is, if you take away the criteria of works, do I still have any reason to try to live a good life? If you're saying we're justified, we matter before God by faith and grace alone, haven't you just taken away the whole reason why I try to live a good life? And Paul answers, certainly not. Paul uses that phrase a few different places. It's the strongest way to deny something in the Greek language, is translated certainly not. And so Paul's saying, no, it's not. I'm not at all saying we don't obey the law, we don't seek to live a good life, that we don't seek to figure out what is faithfulness to God. But what I'm saying is that works and performance and trying to live up to a law is entirely the wrong way to go about proving that you matter to yourself, to others, or to God. That it's a category difference, that works can't be the thing that proves to us that we matter. Now, once we do matter to God, once we have faith in Christ, God calls us to live faithfully. And we looked at that last week, right? We looked at Paul coming and telling Peter, you're not living faithfully. The gospel tells you how you need to live faithfully. And Paul still says the law is important to direct our path and show us how we should live. But when it comes to coming into that courtroom to say, do we matter into God's courtroom? Or even if it's different, even in our own courtroom, performance and works will never give us that right verdict. But then here's the problem. In verse 18, it says, "For if I rebuild what I tore down, I prove myself to be a transgressor." What that's saying is, even for Christians, we can't help but come back to seeking to say we matter because of works. That's the situation the Galatians are doing. That's the problem of this whole letter, is the Galatians, they were pagans. They're just regular people, non-Christians, and they were justifying themselves by what they do. And then Paul comes and he brings the grace of the gospel to them, and they believe and they're justified by faith in Christ alone. But then these Jewish Christians come back and say, you know, Jesus is great, but you also have to obey the law if you want to be right in that courtroom. So that's the whole problem. The Gentiles are they believe in Jesus, but they're like in two camps. They're like, I believe in Jesus, but I think I've got to be justified by what I do. But that's what you and I are at least tempted to do all the time, right? We hold on to, yes, faith in Jesus is the thing, but when we don't accomplish the goal that we had, we're crushed, right? Or emotionally, we find ourselves depressed or angry or something that's showing up that says, you know, that performance, not meeting my scale or not meeting someone else's scale is actually very, very important to me. It's, I need Jesus, but I need that also. And so there's a way we all struggle with what the Galatians are struggling with. We all struggle with figuring out, with finding where do we matter, and not being only in Jesus, but it's Jesus and whatever thing we excel at. So think of that thing that you are excellent at, where you excel. What happens when you do that thing and you present it to someone else and they're like, oh, that was okay? Have you had that happen? When they say, oh, that was okay, it's something, especially if you're in a place where you've invested, you know, I'm not a bum. I matter because look what I can do in baking. Look what I can do in argument. Look what I can do in design. Look what I can do with money. Look what I can do with justice, in managing people and raising kids. Whatever that area of your life is that you're like, I am excellent. When you present that and someone's like, oh, that was okay, it shows us right there if you're crushed, then you were seeking to matter, just like Johnny Weir, with that thing that you excel in. That Jesus wasn't enough to hold your matterness, your verdict to be a mattering. You wanted Jesus and you needed that other thing. And so I think that is something that Christians struggle with all the time, at least with the temptation to find our justification in the things that we do. So what's the solution? The solution is in verse 19, or actually verse 18. No, I'm sorry, 19. For through the law, I died to the law so that I might live to God. What's Paul saying here? He's saying, if you look enough at the law of God or enough of the law of yourself, the standards you've set up, or enough of the law of what someone else has proposed to you, you will find that in the law itself is, by that law telling you this is what you've got to do to achieve, you'll realize that this is the very reason why I can't achieve anything with this. So remember, Paul, before he becomes a Christian, is zealously following the law. He loves the law. He's supporting it. But what does his zeal for the law make him do? It makes him murder people. It makes him pursue human beings, men and women and children, and lock them up in jail because they don't believe the right thing. So I think Paul came to realize the law, by pursuing the law, if I look at it enough, it shows me that the law is itself going to promote sin, not kill it. That the law itself is going to keep pushing me forward into places where I can't find justification and keep frustrating me. So in one sense, the law keeps saying, well, that was good, but you need to do more, you need to do more. So at some point, the reasonable person says, you know what, this whole law thing is bending in on itself, and there's no way I can find rightness in this law or in any law. So Paul says, I've been, for through the law, I died to the law. So he's like, the law says you don't measure up, you're worthless. You say, okay, you're right. And as soon as you die to a law, it doesn't have any power over you. And so Paul says, I died to the law so I might live to God. I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And so what Paul's doing in this latter part is he's coming back to that core of Christianity, but he's changing the metaphor a little bit. He's saying that the core of Christianity is being united to Jesus. Right? But so it's Christ who lives in me. I no longer live, it's Christ who lives in me. And that life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. You know, there's some currencies around the world that are pegged to the U.S. dollar. Right? Most currencies float, right? The euro is up, the pound's down, the yen is up. But there's some countries that just say, you know what? Forget the whole thing. Our currency is equal to $1, or our currency is equal to $3. So United Arab Emirates does this, Brazil, Argentina does this, Israel at least used to do this, China did this in 2005, they broke the thing. What they're saying is, okay, our currency is gonna go wherever your currency goes. Wherever yours goes up, ours will go up. Yours goes down, ours will go down. But we believe in you. The best path is for us to attach ourselves to the U.S. dollar, to attach our currency to the U.S. dollar. In a sense, that's what Paul's saying here he's doing. He's saying, I'm giving up this whole law thing. The whole, can I perform, can I not perform? What does it take to die to this? Okay, kill me. Because I'm going to attach my currency to Jesus' currency. I'm going to attach my worth to Jesus' worth. I'm going to attach my performance to Jesus' performance. So wherever his goes, that's where mine's going to go. You know, I don't want to play this game of being my self-made man and satisfying myself and satisfying others and coming into that courtroom of God hoping that I might somehow have the goods to say I'm right. Because Jesus is the only one who is right. And so by we attaching ourselves to him, by being united to Jesus, therefore, that in a sense is how the justification works. Right? That's how the faith in Jesus works, because God looks upon us and says, oh, you're attached to Jesus. Okay, so Jesus' currency becomes your currency. Jesus passes, you pass the test. So you're in the right. Jesus' righteousness gets imputed, gets credited to our account. And then Paul wants to make sure when he says in verse 19, for the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. There's a little bit of confusion here, right? He says, I no longer live, and then he says, I live. What he's saying in a sense is, yeah, everything depends on Jesus, but now that Jesus has enabled me to have that, I matter, I'm justified, I'm going to live the rest of my life in faith in that Son of God. So it doesn't mean I give up all need to be faithful. Jesus was faithful for me, but that becomes the engine for which I seek to end up being faithful. So who did this? Think through, who's an example of someone who did this? Think through where we've been so far in Galatians. You see, I said different cultures argue differently. What Paul has done so far is he's argued out of the narrative of his life. We don't tend to do that too much, but for Paul, he's arguing with the Galatians, he's saying, look at my life. Look how God met me on the road to Damascus and called me to himself. And then look at how I went before the apostles in Jerusalem and I laid out my gospel and I risked my whole entire ministry to say, do I have the right gospel? Is this the correct gospel? And then look at my life, how I confronted Peter. So I think Paul is doing what he's saying right here. And the result is it's allowed his life to argue for something. Paul's very own life argues for the gospel. One person put it like this. Paul is a paradigm of the gospel. He preaches to the Gentiles. The formulation of Paul's autobiographical remarks in terms of formerly and now serves the paradigmatic function of contrasting Paul's conversion from Judaism to Christianity with the Galatians' inverted conversion. So because Paul is found justification in Christ, his life is actually able to start to argue for the fact that justification only occurs through faith in Christ. So next week, the reason this is a complex passage is that this is a transition point. And next week on, Paul's going to move to logic. Right? He's going to become very logical and argumentative. But up until this point, he said, you know what, I'll put forth myself as the proof that it's only faith in Jesus. Which I think is a very powerful thing that the gospel could actually change us so that our lives argue for things. And so I think it's an important question to ask, what is our life right now arguing for? What does my life argue for? What does your life argue for? Because what Paul is saying is, if you're justified by faith in Christ, it actually frees you from having to argue for yourself, and it enables you to your life to argue for something else, to argue for the beauty of Jesus, to argue for God's kingdom to be worked out in the world around you. It turns the focus away from having to always be consumed with yourself. Right? Harold Abrams and Johnny Weir, we all make similar quotes, right? We just don't put them in the magazines, right? The same verbiage goes through your head and my head, but they're just silly enough to actually tell it out loud. But they're terribly self-consumed, right? And we're terribly self-consumed when we think, oh, I'll matter if I get this. I'll matter if I accomplish this. But what faith in Jesus does is it says my self issues is the question's over, settled. Now I can think about what can my life argue for? What can my life do? How can my life serve others? How can it point to God's beauty? How can it point to his truth? How can it point to the grace of the gospel? So that's what the central core of the Christian message is and what it does. And Paul's life, Paul's presented his life as one that that he's already able to do that. His life is pointing to Jesus. Okay, so that's how I see this complex passage. How do you see it? What's difficult, or what questions do you have of this passage, or what applications have you come up with as we've been talking about it?